Okay, good morning. We're going to try to get through Perek Hey, Vav, and Zayin. We know there today. See if it works or not. We've gone through the first four, and we're probably going to build a little bit on things that we said earlier, which I guess makes sense if it's the progression of the Megillah. I'll try to elaborate a little bit when we get to the points that are very much connected to things that we've talked about earlier. So beginning Perek Hey, Pasuk Aleph, page 1256. So again, when we last left off, Esther had agreed finally to agree to what Mordechai had suggested, that she should go in front of the king, and she told Mordechai to gather together all the Jews and fast for 3 days and daven, and with that she would go in front of the king. Vayhi bayomar shlishi, it came to the third day. Va'tilbash Esther machus, and she wore royalty. Va'tamod b'chatzar beis hamelech ha'pinimis, and she stood in the courtyard of the king, the inner courtyard of the king, nochach beis hamelech, opposite the house of the king. The hamelech yoshev akisei machuso b'beis hamachus nochach pesach habayis, and the king was sitting on his throne in the house of royalty in front of the opening of the door. So it doesn't seem like there's so much going on in the pasuk, but there are a lot of details that seem to be a little bit difficult. So first of all, we're talking about the third day. So what that seems to indicate is that, again, Mordechai had told Esther that one of the things that Esther had suggested was saying was, he hasn't called me, for 30 days to come, so he's probably going to call me soon, so maybe we should just wait a little bit. And Mordechai rejected that and said, no, when it comes to the future of the Jewish people, we can't wait, you have to go ahead and you have to do it right now. So apparently, what we see from this is that waiting 3 days for the purpose of tefillah in order to prepare herself spiritually to go in front of the king was not considered to be an inappropriate form of delay on the part of Esther, and that's why she waits these 3 days. Now it's interesting, it says Vatilbash Esther Malchus, she wore Malchus. I would have thought that the pasuk should say Vatilbash Esther Bigdei Malchus, the clothes of royalty. What does it mean that she wore royalty? It seems to be that there's a word missing. It shouldn't have said big day. It shouldn't have said just plain malchus. It should have said big day malchus. So what it seems to indicate is that somehow she held herself more as a queen. She came in with the presence of a queen of royalty, as opposed to just, obviously that includes also that she was wearing her royal garments. But the aura, the impression that she gave off, and Chazal indicate that also, that she was wearing, that she came in with the presence of the Shechina, that her presence when she came in was different than simply just coming in as the queen. Now, where did she come into? So it says, "Vatamod b'chatzar beis hamelech ha'pnimis." She came into the, she stood at, in the courtyard of the beis hamelech, opposite Beis HaMelech, and then it says the king was sitting at the Beis HaMalchus. Is there a difference between Beis HaMelech and Beis HaMalchus? It seems to be there is, because it could have easily said that the king was sitting at Kisei Malchuso Beis HaMalchus, Beis HaMelech. What's the Beis HaMalchus? One says the house of the king, and one sounds the house of royalty. It sounds a little bit broader. And then so she's standing there, and the king sees that she is that she's waiting. It seems strange that this king, who's afraid, who's a little bit on the paranoid side, is nervous that there's going to be a rebellion, and that's why he put Haman on top to make sure that he would be in charge and know everything that's going on, that he'd be sitting right by the door where somebody coming in would be, that he would be able to see somebody coming in right away. You would think that a king who's on the nervous side would not want to be sitting so out in the open, exposed, right? So the Malbim suggests that what we see here again is the hashkacha of Hashem, that Hashem orchestrated things in such a way that the king would immediately see Esther. It says that the Beit HaMelech refers to the private the private chambers of the king, and that's where Esther assumed that she would find the king, which would be somewhere in protected, not exposed to the outside. And Esther was standing, waiting to go in and waiting to see if she'd be able to get into the Beis HaMelech. The way God orchestrated things was that the king wasn't sitting the Beis HaMelech. She was waiting the Beis HaMelech, but he was sitting Akisei Malchuso b'Beis HaMalchus. He was sitting in the broader palace, not in his private chambers, the Beis HaMelech, but he was sitting in the Beis HaMelechos. He was sitting in the palace, and it happened to be that the way that his throne was situated was in such a way that he would see her directly. Why is that so important? So the Alshech says that Esther prepared herself for this. She dressed up. She wanted to go in front of her husband, the king. And the effect of her going in front of the king would be very different if she shows up at the door and then a servant goes in and tells the king, oh, your wife Esther the queen is here, versus if he sees her himself, he's just looking and sees that she's all dressed up and she wants to come, and that type of reaction was the reaction that Esther wanted to have. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated things that even though she assumed that he was Viva Beis HaMelech in the private quarters, for whatever reason at that moment he wasn't there. And because of that he was able to see her directly and then proceeded to invite her in. So then what happens? The king sees Esther the queen standing in the courtyard. She found favor in his eyes. Vayoshet HaMelech LeEsther Es Shavir HaZahav Asher Bido. He extended the golden scepter they had in his hand. Vatikra Esther, and Esther came close. Vatigav Rosh HaShavir and touched the top of the scepter. So Chazal tell us that a malach forced him, that he wasn't going to put out his scepter on his own, but a malach came and kind of forced his arm that he would extend the scepter. Again, what we said was that last time was that Esther said that everybody knows if he doesn't extend the scepter when he sees the person standing there, it's an immediate death sentence. So if he wouldn't have extended his scepter, then right away they would have killed Esther. And the fact that he wouldn't have wanted to extend the scepter fits into the pattern of Ahasuerus, because in Ahasuerus' mind it probably conjured up the same images that he had with Vashti. Vashti is his wife. He calls for her to come and she refuses to come. Esther, he forbids from coming, and then she decides to go against what he's saying and she decides to come. So again, having this woman in his house that he's married to is not listening to what he's saying. Either, again, Vashti, it was that he wanted her to come here, he wanted her to stay away. She's not listening. So again, if we know that the punishment last time for Vashti was death, so certainly...
Why did he want her to stay away?
He had this rule, apparently, that he was in solitude. He hadn't called her for 30 days. And he had this rule that nobody could come. So it seems to be that he wanted to keep his distance from people. So the fact that that Chazal would say it is not very surprising. But the Malbim offers a fascinating insight. And he says also that he hesitated and he didn't put out his scepter right away, but for a very different reason. He says that Ahasuerus never even considered the fact, it never occurred to him, that the rule would apply to his wife. Of course his wife can come in whenever she wants. So Esther's standing there, he wasn't going to put out his scepter right away, because in Ahasuerus' mind, nobody can come in, but of course my wife can come in. He never even considered the possibility that he would have to extend his scepter so as not to cause that his wife would be killed. When he saw that she was standing there humbly waiting, that he realized that she assumed that it did apply to her, and therefore he extended the scepter, or the malach extended the scepter, in order to make sure that the guards of the king, who we're not sure what perception they had, did they assume that it applied to Esther, or did it not apply to Esther, to make sure that they wouldn't overreact. So what does the king say? So now Esther's life has been spared in her initial entrance into the king's courtyard. Vayomer lo hamelech, the king says to her, Ma loch Esther malko, what do you need? What's going on? Uma bakash asich, and what is your request? Ad chatzi hamalchus v'inatzilach, up to half of the kingdom, I will be happy to give you. So what's Malach Uma Bakashasech? Seems to be asking her two questions. What are the two questions?
What's bothering you?
First is what's bothering you, right. The Malbim says first is anything that's bothering you. Second is if there's nothing that's bothering you, you must have come here because you want something. So even if it's not something negative, if there's something that you're interested in, so just let me know. And that's why he says, if you're interested in up to half of the kingdom, whatever exactly that means, obviously he wants to be very generous with her. No problem. I'd be happy to give it to you. So what's Esther's response? Now, it's Esther's time. We know why she was going. We know what her mission was. So now the king said, what do you want? So now Esther's response should be, save my people. What does Esther say? Vatomer Asteri Malamelech Tov, if it's good for the king, Esther says to the king, Yovo Hamelech V'Haman Hayom, the king and Haman should come today, El Meshteh Asher Asisi Lo, to the meal, to the party that I made for him. What happened?
That makes sense to me.
That makes sense to you?
Because she's in the court. She's not going to speak in front of a bunch of people. She doesn't want to give Haman an opportunity to...
But Haman's not there.
...to overhear.
Haman's not his spies.
To overhear and make some plans.
It could be. Again, I think the simplest approach would have been to just ask right there and then. Again, the king was giving her... We don't know who else was present. Obviously, there were some people who would enforce the killing the person who comes in. The king could have easily, you know, asked everybody to leave. He's willing, this is his wife, he's willing to let her ask, but right, obviously she had something more in mind. So there are many different reasons that are given in terms of why didn't she just go for the jugular? Why didn't she go right away and just say, this is what I want? So there are many reasons that are given, just to go through a few of them. So some suggest that it was to show that she wanted to make sure that it wouldn't be perceived as a personal vendetta against Haman. If right now she goes and she says, you know, this Haman's coming after me, so then it might be perceived that she has something against Haman. If first she invites Haman and the king to a party and shows that she's willing to sit down to a meal with Haman, then it takes away the personal aspect of it. Others suggest, similar to what you were saying, that she wanted to confront Haman, wanted Haman to be there without him having had a time to prepare any sort of response. He didn't know why they were being invited to this meal. He didn't know what was going on. So if she, you know, tells the king what's really bothering her in front of Haman and the king, then he's going to be forced to respond right away, and he can't plan a response to try and get himself out of this, himself out of the situation. Others suggest that she wanted to make sure that not only would the Jews be saved, kind of, she asked to get rid of the decree, she wanted to make sure that Haman would be taken care of as well. And maybe if the king only uprooted the Gezerah, so Haman's going to come back, he'll put himself back together in a year or two, he'll be back, and start it again. So she wanted to make sure that she would figure out a way to get rid of both Haman and the Gezerah and the decree against the Jews. Chazal say something very interesting, that she didn't want the Jews relying on her. She wanted to make sure that they would... their bitachon and their trust would be fully in Hashem. Because imagine the situation. The Jews are fasting for 3 days, and they're waiting for Esther to go in and to make this big request in front of the king. And then, you know, later that same day, word starts spread. Okay, what happened? What happened when Esther went to the king? And they hear, oh, she's going to a party later with Haman and Achashverosh. So the average person on the street probably assumes that she chickened out. You know, she couldn't do it. She prepared herself. She made a fast. She did all these things. And then she didn't go through with the plan. Then she gave up. And she said, okay, we'll just have a party instead. And we can't rely on Esther anymore. And that's what Esther wanted. Esther wanted that the Jews would be relying fully on Hashem. And whatever she can do along the way, she's certainly going to try to do. But she didn't want that their trust would be there, because we have somebody, we have our person, you know, fighting for us in the palace. And Rashi and others suggest, and this seems to be a popular approach in the Mefarshim, that she wanted to lead the king on to think that there was something going on between her and Haman. And that, because why else, if you think from the king's perspective, he's offering her this great deal, whatever you want, I'm going to give it to you. And she'd say, okay, now let's have a nice dinner together, and we'll invite Haman too. It's like, why is Haman coming to my nice dinner with my wife? He's the third wheel. I don't need Haman coming along. So the king becomes a little bit suspicious, and it's interesting. If you look at the words, Esther even leaves it a little bit vague. She says, El HaMishteh Asher HaSisi Lo, come to the meal that I made for him. Who's the him? Is it for the king, or is it for Haman? And Esther was baiting Achashverosh a little bit and wanted to get his mind churning to thinking about all these other possibilities, that there's something maybe going on between Haman and Esther. And
that's why he didn't sleep that night.
And that's probably part of the reason he didn't sleep that night. Yeah, we'll get there shortly. No, absolutely. He wanted to create a certain jealousy. Now, obviously, by doing this, she's putting herself in a dangerous situation as well, because if the king really thinks that it's true, Esther is equally guilty. But again, in terms of getting things to unfold the way she wanted to, apparently she thought this was the best approach. It's interesting, the Gemara lists many more reasons, and the Gemara at the end says that Rabbah bar Avua bumped into Eliyahu HaNavi on the street, and he asked him which is the real reason, and he said that all of them are true. So again, there are multiple layers to understanding these stories in the Megillah. So now what happens? So Esther again has Achashverosh unsure of what's going on. You know, he makes her this offer, and all she's asking for is to go to this meal. So the king says, "Vayomer Hamelach, Maharu Asaman, hurry up and make Haman come quickly." Lasso says, "Dvar Esther," to do what Esther said. "Vayevo Hamelach v'Haman El Mishta Asher Asasa Esther." And the king and Haman both come to the party that Esther made. And now the king asks again, "Vayomer Hamelach Esther v'Mishta Hayayin." The king again says to Esther, "Mashe Lasech v'Nasin Lach. What can you want, and I'll give it to you." "Habakash Asech, Atzatia Machus v'Sayas." And up to half the kingdom, and I'll do it. It sounds like even more insistent than before. Before it was Venus, and I'll give it to you. Here, I'll do it. I'm going to go ahead. Ask whatever you want. Okay, so now for sure is her time, right? Okay, here is my big request. If I find favor in the king's eyes, if it's good with the king, you know, she's getting him all ready. That Haman and the king should come to the meal that I'm making for them. And tomorrow I will do what the king wants. So why should she do it again? Why now? Why she got to the first meal? Why at this point did she not ask the king what she really wanted? Why did she now ask to come to a second meal? So the Malbim points out, I mean, it's clear when you read the Psukim, there's this focus that she has on Imatasi Chayim Beinecha. She's giving this hakdama, this introduction to whatever she's going to ask for, by saying, if I find favor in the king's eyes, then I'll tell the king my request. And he explains that she wanted to make sure that in the king's mind, the primary focus of her request is going to be that she wants to find favor in his eyes. Secondary to that is that she might want something, but she needs to first establish that her relationship with the king is on a very, very high level. She wants to make sure that they're really getting along, and that she really finds favor in his eyes.
So she tells him, "Please come right now to this wine feast."
That was the first one.
The wine feast, and he says, "Okay, so what?"
What do you want? And she says, "Come back again." Right. What do you want?
Like today, now?
No, now she says tomorrow. Machara sekidvar melech. And she's keeping.
Tomorrow I will do the king's bidding. What does that mean?
Oh, so what it seems to be is that she realized that she's, you know, as much as she's trying, and this also seems to be part of it as well, is she's trying to get the curiosity of the king going even more. The fact that she's going to make it.
Say, just tell me, right?
It seems to be that, again. That was a common theme. We pointed out, I think, in 2 weeks ago, that he was constantly asking her what country she's from, and she never responded. It seems to be that he only wanted to push Esther to a certain extent. But it could be that she realized that as much as she's trying to make him curious, that she can only play this game so much. And that was why she added in, "Tomorrow I'll really tell you what's going on. Don't think I'm not going to ask you to come back for a third meal. If you come back to the meal tomorrow, I'll do what you're asking. I'll tell you what's really bothering me.
What's going on, and doesn't he know she's just trying to kiss up him by making all these meals?
How does he know? We don't know what he... Again, if we go back to our... assumption has been that he was duped by Haman into the entire situation. He has no idea what's going on.
And he doesn't know she's Jewish.
And she doesn't know she's Jewish.
It takes into account the king's relationship with Haman, because they're very close. And if she indicates that she's angry with Haman, she wants him to get rid of Haman, anything stronger, he may reject it.
Absolutely.
Because he said half the kingdom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's true. It's true.
Which is why I think she's asking the
people
more often, because she can develop more of a closeness with him.
That's also part of it, right? No, that's also, and that's right, correct. And that's the focus on the imatasi chayin beinacha, that he wants to, absolutely. Basically, right. Which is why the fact that Haman is there is making it, is driving the king a little bit crazy. He doesn't know exactly.
Right, but the second party is definitely for Lahem, two of them.
Oh, that's right. That's, and that probably makes it worse in the king's eyes. Like, I could have, the king could have interpreted the first one as a sisi lo, that she's making it for him, is referring to himself. But once it's a she'eset lahem, that I'm going to do it for them, so now she's really almost equating Haman and the king. So in the king's mind, he's getting a little bit antsy. Again, the one saving grace, which I assume, which it seems that Esther realized, is that she needed to tell them that I'm not going to play this game, you know, there's going to be an end to it. Come back tomorrow, and I will tell you what's, I'll tell you what's really going on. So now what happens? Vayitze Haman bayomahu. Haman leaves that day. Sameach v'tov lev. Haman is very happy. So it seems that that's a stark contrast between Haman and Achashverosh. Achashverosh isn't happy with this whole meal thing. Achashverosh is very stressed out and curious, and he doesn't know what's going on. Why is it that she keeps inviting us back for these meals? Haman, on the other hand, he loves having all the kavod. He loves the fact that he's the only one that's invited to come with the king and Esther. But as much as he is happy, v'chiros Haman es Mordechai b'shar ha-melech, when he sees Mordechai sitting at the gate of the king, v'lo kam v'lo zam imenu, he didn't get up, he didn't even move for him, v'yimalei Haman al Mordechai chemach, Haman was filled with anger against Mordechai. So again, this pasuk is pointing out to us the simcha. It's stressing that Mordechai didn't even move. We don't have that earlier. We know that Mordechai didn't bow down, but it seems to be that here there's something even more than that. And also, that I think this is the first time that it says that the anger was directed at Mordechai. Earlier, it was the cause of the anger, but then it was Vayivez Beinav. He couldn't just be angry at Mordechai. He was angry at all the Jews. Here, it tells us that he was angry against Mordechai. So what does he do? Vayisapak Haman, he's able to hold it in, restrain himself. Vayavol, so he comes back home. Vayishlach, Vayaveyas, Ohava, Vazeresh Ishto, and he calls for his loved ones and for his wife Zeresh. Vayisaper Lohem Haman as Kvod Ashov Rovanov, and Haman relates to them about all of his wealth and all of his children. Vayisko Asher Gidlo HaMelech, and how many promotions he's gotten from the king. Vayis Asher Niso, and how much more he's been promoted. Allah Surim Abdi HaMelech, above everybody else. Vayomer Haman Aflo Hivia Esther Malkoim HaMelech al-Mishah Asher Asasaki Mosi, and it goes so far that the queen made a banquet and she only invited me and the king, nobody else. And Vigam L'machar Ani Karu Lo'im HaMelech, and even tomorrow I'm called to go together with the king again to a meal of Esther. But in spite of all that, the kol ze einenu shoveli, it's all worthless to me. B'chol eis asher ani roes Mordechai yodi yoshev b'shar ha-melech, as long as I see Mordechai the Jew sitting in the gate of the king. So what do they suggest? Vatomer lo Zeresh ishto b'chol ha'avav. So Zeresh, his wife, and his loved ones say, Yasu eitz gavoch hamishim ha'o, you should make a tree 50 amos high. Uvaboker, and in the morning, and Mordechai melech yisluos Mordechai alav. In the morning, you'll go tell the king that you should hang Mordechai from it. Uvoim ha'melech al mishtes ha'meach, and you should go to the party with the king happy. Vayitav ha'davar lechnei Haman. Vayas eitz, and Haman thought it was a good idea, and he made the tree. Why did he gather his family together? What was the purpose of this gathering? They didn't know how rich he was. They didn't know how many children he had. So what advice did he want to deal with Mordechai? He couldn't figure out on his own that he wants to kill Mordechai. He had a whole plot that he was able to figure out in terms of destroying all the Jews, and somehow here.
To brag about the Mishnah, I think, no.
It could be. Just there's so many other details that are related. So is it just to say that how much he was promoted? Again, it seems to be that in the response, nobody relates to the fact that he got the promotion. They only relate to the fact that it was about Mordechai. It seems to indicate that he wanted advice how to deal with Mordechai. But why couldn't he deal with Mordechai? On his own? And then what was the plan that was finally suggested? Make a tree 50 amos high. Seems kind of tall. Why do you need such a tall tree? And in the morning, why do you have to wait until the morning? What's the significance of that? So the Malbim says that all these psukim work together. So he leaves the party and he's very happy. He says that Vayitzei Haman Bayom Hahu. On that day he comes out Sameach V'Tov Lev. That was the first time, this is the happiest he's ever been. He's always bothered by something, he wants kavod, but now he's realized that he's basically reached the pinnacle of the amount of kavod, of the promotions that he's gonna get. You can't get much higher than this. So now, the fact that in spite of the all the promotions that he's getting, Mordechai is sitting there, and this time, not only in the past, maybe he was willing to stand up out of respect for Haman because he was a minister of the king. Mordechai had enough of this. He's not even standing up. Nothing that you know really hit home to Haman, who was, you know, enjoying the fact that he's reached this new height, the new heights of the respect that he deserved. Now, just as an aside, I just kind of keep this question in the back of your mind in terms of the role that, you know, Hashem is playing in the Nes of Purim. Imagine how the story would have developed had it not been that Mordechai would happen to have been sitting there when Haman left the gates of the king.
Why wouldn't he move? I mean, we're not talking about bowing down.
Why wouldn't he move? Three days of no eating.
But it's showing. It's almost antagonistic. You know what I mean?
I think at this point he had enough. He realized that the only way to deal with Haman is that it's going to be Haman or the Jews. One or the other is going down at this point. Okay. He realized that he'd already been informed that the din was paskin in Shemayim, and they needed to do tshuva. That was the only way they were going to get out of it. And that's so he had enough of it. But it's an interesting question just to keep in the back of your mind. I'm not going to be able to answer it, but. Just the fact that had Haman not been walking out and Mordechai had been sitting there at that same second, if Haman would have gone out a different door, just, you know, how the story would have developed, you know, it's just hard to even imagine, because it's this point which begins the Venavoch, so that the entire story is going to flip onto Haman's head. So the Malvin says that he gathered his family together for... It was all one large argument. He explained to them the kavod, the honor that he had gotten, and the greatness that he had achieved. And it was because of that he didn't know how to deal with Mordechai. Because for somebody on his level to simply go and, you know, shoot somebody in the street, it would be beneath the honor that he deserves and that everybody else should be giving him. So he didn't know how to deal with Mordechai because of all the honor and because of the promotions that he'd achieved. For him just to go and knock off somebody on the street was beneath his dignity and would ruin his standing as being this top minister of the king. So he approached his family and said he does need advice. He can't just simply knock Mordechai off. He needs to know how to deal with Mordechai. And that's when Zeresh jumps in, his wife, and says, I have a plan. Says her plan was to make this very, very, very tall tree that would be visible from all parts of the kingdom, and to go in the morning and have Mordechai hanged on the tree. Why is that? Why would that be so significant? What she was telling him was that what you have to do is that there are times when the king is going to punish somebody, and use that person as an example that everybody else should learn that, you know, you don't mess with the king. Said for you to do that is not beneath the dignity. It's not beneath the position that you've achieved. For you to go simply and kill Haman on the street, That's pasnish for you. You can't do that. But for you to set an example and to say that if you don't listen to what the king is saying and you're not going to stand up for the decrees of the king, and he said to stand up for Haman, then this is what's going to happen. And that was the significance of doing it in the morning. When everybody wakes up in the morning and they see for the entire day, whenever they go outside on this very, very tall tree, somebody hanging there, they'll realize that there was a point to it, and it does set an example. And he was so excited by the plan that Vayas ha'etz. It doesn't say Vayasu ha'etz. You would think somebody on his level would have other people helping him, but no. He went out with Zrizus and quickly, and he builds and he puts up this tree himself. So Chazal tell where he got it from the Teva, whatever it is. He managed to find a very tall tree or a wood to make into the gallows somewhere, and he puts this together. Then what happens? Balayla Ahu, on that night, the king could not sleep. And he said to bring the Sefer HaZichronos, the book of the remembrances of the chronicles, and it was read in front of the king. So the question is, so why couldn't he sleep? What was bothering him? And why, of all things, did he choose that he had his Sefer HaZichronos read in order to alleviate whatever the problem was? You know, why didn't he try counting sheep or whatever it is in order to help him go back to sleep? And what's the difference between the Sefer HaZichronos and the Divrei Hayamim? And the reason that it appears to be different is because earlier when it says that they wrote down what Mordechai did in the story of Bigson and Teresh, it said they wrote it down the Sefer Divrei Hayamim Lifnei HaMelech. So it sounds like there are two different books here. There's a Sefer HaZichronos and there's a Sefer Divrei Hayomim. What's the difference between the two? And then, you know, suddenly It says, "Vayimatzei kasuv." They found written, "Asher yigid Mordechai, a big son of Asarish, that Mordechai had told the king about big son and Asarish." Nesari said, "Melech b'shamrei asav, asher b'shuish lachad, v'melech achashverosh." The two that tried to assassinate the king. And then he says, "Vayomer Melech, mana asay yekaru yula Mordechai." What was done for Mordechai about for this? "Vayimun arei Melech b'shamrei asav lo nasay modavar." Nothing was done. Suddenly, it's very bothersome. It had been probably 5 years since this event took place. That took place in the 7th year of Achashverosh's rule, and we're in the 12th year of his rule now. For 5 years, he didn't do anything for Mordechai, but suddenly now, in the middle of the night, he needs to figure out what to do. Why so suddenly? So we know, why didn't he sleep? He has very good reason not to be able to sleep. He has a lot on his mind. He has no idea what's going on with his wife. He doesn't know if there's something going on between his wife and Haman. She keeps inviting him back to the meal. Tomorrow he's going to the meal again. She keeps egging him on. He's a nervous wreck. So the fact that he is not able to sleep is not particularly surprising. What's the Sefer HaZichronos? So why would that alleviate whatever it is? So he was hoping that within the chronicles, within the history books, he could try and figure out why it would be that if Haman is up to something, nobody told me about it. Maybe it's that I wasn't nice to somebody, somebody did something for me, I didn't reward him or her for whatever it was, and nobody came to me to tell me now that Haman is plotting against me. Or is up to something with my wife. So that's why, specifically at this time, he decides, you know what, maybe to alleviate the nervousness, let's try and figure out what's going on. So he has this book read, and that's why he's going to want to pay back right away, because he wants that if somebody knows what's going on, maybe they'll tell him as soon as he pays them back. So the Mavim explains what's the difference between, and this is very important for the story as a whole, what's the difference between the Sefer Divrei Hayomim and the Sefer HaZichronos? So he says that there were two different things. The Sefer Divrei Hayomim was the official chronicles, the history of the kingdom, and it was a public document. There was something that was out there for anybody to read if they want to know what's going on in Persia. The Sefer HaZichronos was the king's private, notes as to what happened, and it served as sort of an index to the Sefer Divrei Hayomim. If you want to look up something that happened, he had it in shorthand what happened in his book, and then he could look it up in the Chronicles. We mentioned earlier that the reason that Haman was promoted, we couldn't figure out why was Haman suddenly promoted, it didn't tell us, it was right after what happened with Bigthan and Seresh. The Malbim suggested that the reason was that he had forgotten who had saved him. For whatever reason, he was a forgetful person, but he remembered that Esther was the one who related it. So he sort of thanked Esther for what happened, but he figured that since Haman was the one who created the situation whereby Esther was able to become the queen, because he was the one that suggested getting rid of Vashti. So because of that, in order to reward Esther and Haman, he promoted Haman to this new position. So we suggest that in the public records, Haman was able to keep this, tale going, because he was able to erase, as a public document, he was able to erase in his position as a high minister any mention of Mordechai's name from the story of Bigthan and Seresh, and he was able to replace his own name with it. But there was no way that he could get into the Sefer HaZichronos. The Sefer HaZichronos was the private document that was kept by the king. In the Sefer HaZichronos, it still said that Mordechai was the one who saved the king, who related that Bigthan and Seresh are trying to assassinate him. So now that the king saw what happened, when he discovers that it was Mordechai who said it on Bigthan and Seresh, suddenly he realized that Haman's up to something. It's not so straightforward what Haman's doing. Haman tricked me all along, and whatever promotion Haman's gotten, he didn't deserve. Really, who was the one that deserved it? Mordechai deserved it, because he was the one who, in fact, protected me from Bigthan and Seresh. So now he becomes suspicious of Haman and Esther, and Mordechai now has risen in the eyes of the king, because Mordechai was the one who actually reported on Bigthan and Seresh, and he was never rewarded for it. And Esther and Haman, he doesn't know if he knows that Haman's certainly up to something, and that's because of the fact that Esther keeps inviting him together with Haman to the feast. Maybe she's in on it also. So now he becomes even more suspicious. So then what happens? Hashkacha has it. Vayomer HaMelech mi vechatzer. The king says, who is he? Hear some footsteps in the courtyard. Who's there? The Haman Balachatar Beit Hamelach Achitzinah. Haman had come to the outer courtyard of the king. Leimor Lamelach, this closest Mordechai, Lo Itz Asher Yichin Lo. He had come at that moment to tell the king about his plan to hang Mordechai. So the servants of the king said, Haman's outside in the courtyard. And the king says for him to come. And Haman comes. And the king says, what should the king do to a person who finds favor in his eyes? Achashverosh here did something very wise. Achashverosh, now that he realized what Haman was up to, he knew that Haman, what the pasuk says now, next, he knew this was going to happen. Vayomer Haman b'libo, v'miach bot ha-melech ha-sosik ha-ryo sarmi meni. He knew that Haman would think that he's referring to him. What should I do for him? He wanted to see what would Haman suggest. Vayomer Haman el-melech, so what does Haman say? Ish asher ha-melech ha-feitz b'karo, starts out the whole introduction, the person who the king finds favor in his eyes, me. Yavil levush malchus, you bring the clothes of the king, asher lavash b'melech, the ones that the king wore. And the horse on which the king rode. And you put the crown on. And you give all these things to one of the king's servants, the upper minister, noble officers. They'll be shu esoish, and they'll dress the man, asher amalach ha-feitz b'kara, who finds favor in the king's eyes, v'kivu al-sus b'chavoyer, and they'll ride him and meet him on the horse in the streets of the city, v'karu l'fanav kach la-yehoseh lo-ish asher amalach ha-feitz b'kara. This is what we do to the person who finds favor in the king's eyes. So now the king saw what are the true ambitions of Haman. Royalty. He wants the clothes that the king wore. He wants the horse of the king. He wants to wear the crown of the king. And Achashverosh now realizes even more that what he's just learned about Haman in terms of the fact that he tricked him in getting his promotion in the first place is just one step. What does he want in the end? He wants me. He wants my position. He wants to be the king. He has aspirations for royalty. And even the way that it's written, the Isha Shemelech HaFeitz B'Karo, you can see Haman, relishing in the moment. And Achashverosh is picking up on this, the fact that he's really enjoying the fact that he's going to be getting this kavod, the honor that a king certainly deserves. Now what is interesting is that even Haman seems to realize that he might be going too far. When it comes to the crown, he doesn't say Asher, that the king wore. The other ones, it's the Asher Lavash Bo HaMelech. The garments that the king wore. It's the Sus Asher Rechav Alav HaMelech, the one that the king rode on. It doesn't say the Kesher Malchus Asher Lavash Bo HaMelech that the king... That far he didn't go. And in fact, the way he wrote it, the way that he said it, was a little bit ambiguous. Vasher Yitan Kesher Malchus Berosho, who's wearing the crown? Some of the Persians say he was suggesting only to put the crown on the head of the horse. To realize to put the crown on the actual head of the person riding, he even knew that Achashverosh may not go so far. So he got a little bit nervous. And in fact, when the king says in the next pasuk, "Vayomer HaMelech L'Haman," he says to Haman, "Maher, kaka talavush v'sasus kasher dibart, to take the clothes and the horse like you said." The king leaves out the crown. Mm-hmm. That far, even for to show cover from Mordechai, the king wasn't going to go. And he tells him, go do this for Mordechai, who's sitting in the courtyard of the gate of the king. Don't leave anything out.
So he's saying then you should put the royal crown on the horse's head now.
He doesn't say anything about the crown. He just says he should ride with the horse. He doesn't say what he. It's interesting that he leaves the horse.
Don't omit a single detail you suggested.
Right, but he only tells him that. But right, so you have to.
Like,
you have
to know that Mordechai.
It seems to be except for that, because he says only. He never tells him to take. When he says what you should take, he says take the garments and take the horse. He doesn't say take the crown. So it could be meant without. It could be meant with the crown also. But it seems to be that the king was very sensitive to that, and he was not going to be willing to just give the crown to anybody. Then what happens? Vayikach Haman es halavush v'sasus, and he takes the garment and he takes the horse. Vayalbeshes Mordechai, and the end of Haman is beginning now. And Haman goes and he dresses Mordechai. Vayarkiveyu berchov ha'ir. And he rides him and leads the horse in the streets of the city. And he calls in front of him, Asher Amelech Hafeitz Bikaro, so you should do for the king does for the, so is done to the person that the king, who finds favor in the king's eyes. And then what happens, Vayashav Mordechai Asher Amelech, Mordechai goes back to the gate of the king, Vaman Yitzchak Al Biso, and Haman goes back to his house, Avel Vachafoy Rosh, very dejected. And then what happens? Vayisaper Haman Lazarus Yishtolech Olavav Yizkosher Koro. He decides to tell everybody again what happened. He, you know, told them the story when everything was good, and now he seems to be telling them when things are not looking as good. And he says,
"Sorry.
Yes, no."
Why is Mordechai returning to the gate? Is there something specific he's doing there?
So either he's waiting for Esther to find out if anything, what's going to happen, or that was the place, that was his job, was basically, he was always sitting with Shara Melech. That's what the king had given him as his role. So he was sitting there maybe in tefillah as opposed to the other people. That seems to be that was his place. And he gathers together his family and he tells them all that happened to him. And his wise people and his wife tells him, if Mordechai is from the Jewish people, and you've already began to fall in front of him, you have no chance. And they're still talking, and the king's ministers come by and they hurry him to go to the party that Esther had prepared for them. So why did Haman gather everybody together to tell him about his downfall? We understand that when everything was going good, so he wants to make sure that his family knows and everybody's all excited for him. But what was the point in gathering together now that things aren't looking as good? And if he's gathering together, seemingly it's to be consoled and for them to make him feel better. And what do they tell him? They tell him, you don't have a chance. You're in big trouble. You might want to rethink this, because if you're already on the way down and Mordechai is a Jew, then obviously his God is helping him, and you're done for. And then what's the significance of the fact that they were still talking and the guards come to take him to the meal of Esther?
He couldn't run away.
He couldn't run away. So that's one possibility. So did Haman really? Did he accept that argument or not? Did he accept the fact that he has no chance, or was that the suggestion, and he wasn't willing to take it or not?
Maybe he didn't have a plan going into this party. Maybe he thought maybe his family would give him some ideas.
So that could be. Right. So the Malbim suggests that Haman gathered them together because what he was afraid of was that everybody had heard about Haman's misfortune, that he was the one leading this horse, and Mordechai is sitting up on the horse in good standing. He was afraid that when they found out, they would have assumed that he went to the king and asked the king to hang Mordechai, and this was the reaction, that not only did the king say no, but he elevated Mordechai up. And if that's the case, then he's really done for, because the king already rejected the basic claim of wanting to get rid of Mordechai. So what he wanted to tell his family was, no, don't, it wasn't such a big deal. It's kosher karo. It's what happened. It was just a coincidence. I went. I never even had a chance to ask the king about hanging Mordechai. And after that, when I was getting there, he remembered that Mordechai had done something good, and he told me to go ride him on the horse. But don't think that there's still a possibility that we can follow through with the plan, because I never discussed with the king hanging Mordechai. And that's really what he wanted to relate to his family. And that's what he said, was this bad luck, Iskol Asher Karahu. But the wise people that were around him realized that it's not just luck. When it comes to the Jewish people, if things are looking up, it's because God is intervening on their behalf. And if you know what's good for you, you should back down at this point, and you shouldn't fight anymore. And then that's why they weren't prophets that they knew what was going to happen. They just realized, and they were smart enough to realize that these things don't just happen by coincidence when it comes to the Jews. And then before he could respond and think about whether he should accept their advice or not, they were taken away to the party. The Malbim adds one interesting point. It relates to something that we'll see a little later, but he says it was significant that they came while they were still talking, because he said they heard what was going on. And he said that's how Charvona, who later on is going to suggest that they hang Haman on the tree on which he planned to hang Mordechai, how did he know that he was planning on hanging Mordechai? So he says he was one of the ministers who came to rush Haman to the meal. And he heard that they were talking about hanging Mordechai and whether it was going to work or not. And then he took him. So then when the time came and it was an opportunity, he was the one who was able to suggest to the king that we have this tree on which he wanted to hang Mordechai. Now we come to the second party, beginning of Perek Zayin, Vayavoha Melech Vaman Lishtosim Esther Malka. And the king and Haman both come to drink with Esther Malka. It's very interesting that every other time it says that they're going to the party, it says El HaMishteh Asher Es Esther. Here it just says they came to drink with Esther. What's the difference? So maybe the difference is that until now they were able to come and, you know, fully participate in the party. Part of the party is the drinking. Both the king and Haman had a lot on their mind at this point. The king had no idea what was going on with his wife and with Haman, so he was certainly too nervous to be partying. And Haman also realized that he's not sure if he's in such good standing anymore after what his loved ones were telling him and his chachamim were telling him, and after what just happened with Mordechai leading him on the horse. So neither of them could really get fully involved in the party. Okay, they came, they went through the motions, they drank with Esther, but in terms of it being a full mishteh in the full spirit, neither of them could fully participate. And the king said to Esther at this wine feast, what do you want? I'll give it to you. So again, it seems to be, she's kind of lucked out that three times already he's offered to give her whatever he wants. He could have just said, I'm fed up with you. You had your opportunity and I'm done with you. But no, once again, he asks her, what would you like? And Esther the queen said, again, stressing, if I find favor in the king's eyes, it's good for the king. So Esther right now has, in a very dramatic way, telling the king that, this that you've wanted to know all along, what nation that I'm from, I'm going to tell it to you. But even when she's telling it to him, she doesn't come straight out and say it. She says, I want you to give my people, my soul with my question, and my people with my request. She's still baiting the king. He has no idea what's going on. He still doesn't know what she's going to ask for, but it seems like that revelation is finally going to come. Kinimkarnu ani v'ami, myself and my people have been sold, la'ashmid, la'harog, la'abed, to be killed and obliterated. V'ilu la'avadim v'lishvachos nimkarnu ha'charashti, if we had only been sold to be slaves, I would have been quiet. Ki'en ha'tzar shaveh ben ezek ha'melech, it wouldn't have been worth it to the king to deal with it. Why not? Why wouldn't she say anything if all the Jews had been sold to be slaves? That doesn't sound like a very, great opportunity for the Jews. Why would she have been quiet? Why would it not have been worth it for the king to intervene if they had been sold as slaves? So the Malbim says that she was making in this statement she was finally putting out her argument in front of the king. It says, first of all, you have to realize that kinim karnu ani v'ami, I was sold, and that's the point that you should focus on first. And also, my people were sold. And she specifically mentions herself first. And she says that you were tricked, basically, in two ways. Because you were never told which nation. We mentioned this 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago, or last week. In one of the previous shiurim, we mentioned that Haman never told Ahasuerus which nation he was selling. He just said, there's these people, and they're spread out. He was selling me also. He was trying to get rid of he was attacking your own wife. And why didn't he tell you which nation it was? Because he maybe even had a hunch that I was a Jew. He knew that Mordechai and I had something to do with each other. And he wanted to make sure that you wouldn't know that he's trying to destroy me, your queen. And that was one deception of Haman, that he didn't say which people. The second deception was that we were sold not just la'abed, as Haman told the king that they should be lost, which we suggested at the time meant that he wanted them to become assimilated with everybody else. They shouldn't have their own identity. What were we sold for? We were sold also la'ashmid, la'harog, ula'abed, to be completely destroyed. Haman never told you about any of that. And if we had only been sold as slaves, it only would have been the first deception that, you know, it would have been an attack on your wife. So, okay, I wouldn't have told you that that's such a big deal because I'm in the palace. He couldn't have done anything to me anyway. It wouldn't have been worth it to the king. But now it's worth it to the king because imagine you're standing amongst everybody else in the world. If you decide now, Haman has led you to a situation where you're going to be wiping out an entire people. How's that going to look for you? Everybody's going to see throughout the world that Ahasuerus is some king who destroys, you know, an entire nation of people. It doesn't even look good for you. So it's the fact that there were the two deceptions that he attacked, not only, you know, is attacking your wife and some of these people, but that you're going to lose out, and he was trying to hide that from you because he has these aspirations for more and to become the king and to become even greater. Therefore, it's not worth leaving him around. And now he exposes exactly who we're talking about. Who are you talking about? Who is the one that did all these deceptions? Again, this is one of the psukim which seems to indicate that what we're saying makes a lot of sense. I mean, how did he not know? If he was the one who signed the order to destroy them, what's he asking right now? Again, according to what we suggested earlier, that Haman really did this all through deception and he really didn't know what was going on, so then it makes a lot of sense. He really didn't know what was happening. Why would it be that who did this? And there's this repetition. He says first he's asking around the room. Now, who knows what's going on here? Finally, he says, Esther, tell me what's happening. And Esther says, Ish, tsar, v'oyev, this evil enemy, Haman, hara hazeh, this evil Haman, v'haman nivas milifnei hamelech v'hamalka. And Haman began to tremble in terror before the king and queen. And from his question, it seems also you see that at this point, Ahasuerus didn't even, you know, it wasn't even a fleeting thought that she was talking about Haman. Haman was the person she was inviting to the meal. And from her perspective, again, the fact that he thought that Haman was up to something, fine, maybe. But that she would be the one inviting him to the meal, and now she's the one, and now he's the one that's being accused, just made the whole picture that much more, surprising to the king. And then Haman becomes, completely bewildered. It says in front of the king and the queen. So the Malbim says it's very significant that it says in front of the king and the queen. Because now the genius of Esther's plan emerges. Because Haman realized, if only the king had been here and the queen wasn't here, so then I could try to say that she's making something up and it's not true. But now the queen is here, and I'm not going to be able to put that. I can't say now in front of the king that she's a liar and she's going to start defending herself. If only the queen was here, I could try to appease her, and I don't have to worry about the anger of the king. But now that they're both here, I'm really stuck. And that was part of the genius of Esther's plan of having them both here, the shock to Haman, and now Haman has nothing to say. So what happens now? So the king is so angry, he gets up, goes out to the garden, Haman stands up to beg on his life from Esther because he saw that from the king he wasn't going to get any mercy. And you see that exactly was further reflects on the plan of Esther. Once the king went out because he was angry, so then it was only the queen here. So that's what he tried to do. He tried to talk to Esther and see if there was any way that he could appease Esther and get Esther to let him off the hook. Now, why was he so upset? Why was the king? What was bothering Ahasuerus so much? Was it the plight of the Jews? Probably not. Hard to imagine the plight of Esther. More likely, the fact that he was fooled and that he was the one that looked so silly. And then what happens? The king returns from the garden. And Haman fell onto the bed that the queen was there. And the king said, "You're trying to conquer the queen while I'm in the house." And the words went out of the king's mouth, and Haman's face was covered. So it seems like the king returned, and then it seems that there are basically two approaches. Either he assumed that Haman was trying to seduce her in some sort of way, and there was something going on, Or maybe the simplest understanding is that he thought that maybe he was trying to get rid of Esther. He was trying to kill Esther. Esther's the one that caused all these problems for her. He's on the bed. He's trying to get rid of her. And he's like, what do you think you're doing? You're in my palace. You're in enough trouble already. And now you're trying to do something to the queen. It seems like the Chazal pointed out that he wasn't trying to do anything. That he was pushed down either by Malach. Esther pulled him down and said that Esther was very strong. She pulled him down on top of the bed to, again, to make it look like something was happening. Ufnei Haman Chafu, either he became very embarrassed and that was the covering of his face, or, and the Malbim says that was the minhag in those times, that anybody that was to be killed had their, like, I think in those pictures like from Iraq, that they covered their faces when they were going to execute them, so they put the cover on the face, and that was going to be, it for Haman. Vayomer Charvona, Echad min Asari Sim Ufnei Hamelech, and Charvona, one of the ministers in front of the king, said, "Gam hinei oit asher asa Haman leMordechai asher divertov al Hamelech umeid b'leis Haman." We have the tree that Haman made for Mordechai, who spoke good about the king, standing in the house of Haman. Gavoch hamishim amah, 50 amos high. Vayomer Hamelech tuluhu alav, and the king said, "Hang him on it." So it's interesting, Charvona, a lot of words here for Charvona to say. He didn't just say, "Oh, you know, there's a tree over there, go hang him." He made it very clear that Haman was trying to hang Mordechai, and Mordechai was the one who spoke good about the king. And he wanted to make sure that the king realized that what's going on with Haman is not just about Esther, and it's not just about the Jews, but Haman wanted to hang Mordechai. Why? Because he spoke good about the king. Because he was the one that saved you from Bigthan and Seresh. That ruined his plan and his hopes of becoming the king. That's why he wanted, at least that's the way Charvona was relating the message to the king, that's why he wanted to kill Mordechai. And so much so, it was even 50 amos high in his house. He wanted everybody to see that somebody who protects the king, this is what happens to him. And in that way, Charvona flipped everything and made it very personal for Achashverosh. And then the king said to hang him on the tree. And that's why it stresses that Haman was hung on the tree that was prepared for Mordechai. And now the anger of the king became settled. That everything was now, in a certain sense, for Achashverosh solved. He realized that all the problems came and began with Haman, that Haman had an interest not just in destroying the Jews, not just in destroying his wife, but in trying to get the kingdom. He would do whatever it was that was necessary. And now the story, you know, flips on its head, and Haman is hung on that very tree, and finally the king can calm down. So we sort of have our beginning of the Bnei Yisrael being saved. There are three Prakim left for a different time. I don't know when, but that elaborate on the details. And it's interesting. It is very interesting that you would think that it would be very fine with ending the story right now, and the story could have been over. So what else needs to happen? But we still need to undo the decrees, and it seems to be that Esther and Mordechai want to establish themselves and the Jewish people in a certain light in the kingdom. But again, Bezus Hashem, a different time we will maybe get to that. Freilich and Purim.